Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast. I'm Keith Caulfield, Managing Director, Charts and Data Operations at Billboard.
And I'm Katie Atkinson, Billboard's Executive Digital Director, West Coast.
How's it going, Katie?
It's going great, Keith. How about yourself?
I'm doing great.
We're going to talk about why it's going great, but like I had a great weekend, Keith.
Oh, yeah, you had a very exciting weekend. You went to Vegas again.
Again. But this time for like a monumental reason. For the Sphere.
The opening of the Sphere in Vegas with you too on Friday night.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you all about it, guys.
Because as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we've got chart news on how Rod Wave spends a second week at number one on the Billboard 200 Albums chart with Nostalgia, while Doja Cat and Zach Bryan debut in the top 10, how Doja is back at number one on the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart with Paint the Town Red, and SZA's Snooze hits a new high, rising to number two, how Taylor Swift dominates the airwaves yet again as Cruel Summer tops the Radio Songs chart, and how Timbaland, Nelly Furtado, and Justin Timberlake are all back together on a hit single for the first time since 2007.
Did you mention Justin Timberlake?
Funny I would do that.
Because also on the show, we'll be talking about the brand new NSYNC song, Better Place.
Oh my God, they have a new song?
I'm not sure if you've heard about that.
They're back together?
But we will share our initial thoughts on the new Trolls World, Trolls World Tour. On the new Trolls Band Together soundtrack.
Katie might be an expert in trolls.
So many trolls. There's just too many trolls. But also, I'll be telling you all about my experience seeing the opening night of U2's Achtung Baby residency-ish. They're not really calling it that. At Sphere Las Vegas. And all my initial thoughts on this, you know, mind-blowing venue. And also, Keith and I are going to talk a little bit about who we would love to see play there next. So stick around for that. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
Okay, let's do the chart chat. First up, Rod Wave spends a second week atop the Billboard 200 with Nostalgia after debuting at number one a week ago. The set earned 88,000 equivalent album units in the United States in the week ending September 28th, and that was down 36%, of course, according to Luminate. Notably, it's the first of his three number one albums to have led the list for multiple weeks. Also notably, that 88,000 sum is the smallest total for a number one album in 7 months, since SZA's SOS led the list, dated March 4th, with just 87,000 units.
Must have been before Morgan Wallen's album came out. Was it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, it makes you think, like, did someone have an album that was supposed to come out? Oh, yes. Drake was supposed to come out this week.
That's correct.
That was the Doja was supposed to come out the same week as Drake.
Drake was ready to fill this vacuum, and this vacuum remained empty.
Would have been a good week for someone to drop an album. Also in the top 10 of the new Billboard 200, Doja Cat's Scarlet starts at number 4, while Zach Bryan's new Boys of Faith bows at number 8. It's Doja's third top 10 and follows 2021's Planet Her, which peaked at number 2.
Can I say one quick thing?
Am I doing something wrong?
Absolutely not. Okay. I just literally want to say I'm just surprised by number 4 for Doja. She's number 1 on the Hot 100 again, right, with Paint the Town Red?
Yep.
And, you know, I think that Planet Her showed, like, how deep her albums are with potential hit songs, and it was one of those albums that was a slow burn, and so I kind of expected people to understand now, and you know,
would all be there on the first week to just
consume
this thing,
but
the wazoo.
Maybe this is just the kind of artist that she is and is going to be, and these songs are all going to have their moment over the next year and a half, 2 years, just like Planet Her did.
I think also it may have been hampered a bit by the fact that it was, and I don't know, actually, I don't really know. I mean, you know, maybe they've, clearly the label has probably done their own research as to why it was or was not important for them to release much physical for this album. Mm. It was available as a CD, not very widely. It had one, like, limited availability box set that was on her website.
Maybe it had to do with the art being used by another band that was also releasing an album the same week.
Oh.
She put out her album cover, and then another band was like, hey, that's our album cover that we put out a few weeks ago. Oh. And so she used different artwork. Oh. So that could hamper physical.
I mean, I don't think that would have, like, made them, like, suddenly throw away a bunch of vinyl albums.
But listen, Paint the Town Red.
By the way, shouldn't have vinyl either.
Like, yeah, Paint the Town Red, a huge hit song, like, one of her most, like, quickly commercial hit songs.
Right.
And so, you know, she's having a great moment, obviously. Like, Katie, not to disparage her number four
Katie's
debut.
Katie's backpedaling now.
It's a top five debut on the Billboard 200. That's impressive.
It is. Okay, so Zach Bryan, as for him, he's wasted little time in racking up hit albums this year, as the five-song Boys of Faith project is his second top 10 in 2023 after his chart-topping self-titled set, which launched atop the list just 4 weeks ago. Kind of made me, the first thing I thought of was like, why didn't you just stick these five songs on like a deluxe edition?
Zach doesn't play by the industry's rules, Keith.
Nope. I think he was just like, these five songs don't have anything to do with that
right.
body of work.
Yeah. I listened to the album finally, by the way. It's really great. The first one. I'll get around to this one next.
Hurry
now
up.
That I'm like a month later, like, oh, I listened to that great Zach Bryan album.
Next, over on the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart, Doja Cat's Paint the Town Red, which we just talked about, from her Scarlet album, which we just talked about, bumps back to number one.
Oh, it's number one?
Rising 2-1 for its second week atop the list.
Totally spoiled Keith's whole chart news.
I mean, I said it at the beginning of the show.
Okay.
At number two on the Hot 100, SZA's Snooze sneaks up to a new peak, rising 3-2. A week ago, she debuted at number one as the featured artist on Drake's Slime You Out, which drops to number 12 in its second week on the chart.
It's kind of cute to see Doja and SZA together again, the top of the chart, sort of.
Maybe SZA will jump on a remix of something.
There you go.
You know, maybe Doja can jump on a remix of Snooze.
I would love to see Snooze.
Following Justin Bieber's remix.
I would love to see
remix.
Snooze go to number one, by the way. Just like, it's such a great R&B song. Babyface could have a number one.
Friend of the podcast, Babyface, who co-wrote and co-produced the track. Over on the radio songs chart, it might be fall. It's fall, right? Is it fall yet?
It is fall, yes.
Or autumn, as Ed Sheeran calls
September
it.
September 21st.
But Taylor Smith's... Swift's...
Taylor Smith.
But Taylor Swift's... Who? Taylor Swift's Cruel Summer rules the airwaves as the song rises 2-1, becoming her eighth number one on the radio songs chart.
Wow.
On the pop airplay chart, meanwhile, which monitors just airplay on top 40 formatted radio stations, Cruel spends an eighth week at number one, becoming her longest leading number one on the chart, surpassing the seven-week reign of I Knew You Were Trouble.
Just jumping in to say that song is from 2019, everybody. Cruel Summer, 4 years later. Wow.
2023. Weird time.
That is.
I mean, if we think radio is weird now,
yes.
What's radio going to be like in 5 years? Will everything be like a gold, like classic station? Like everything will just be nothing but old stuff?
Well, maybe it'll be like TikTok where things are rediscovered, quote unquote, like years, months, whenever after they've been put out.
Is there a world in 5 years from now where like some deep album cut from like Madonna's True Blue album becomes a hit out of the blue?
Start the campaign, Keith.
Sure.
Start the dance challenge, Keith.
hashtag where's the party 2024. All right. Staying with the pop airplay chart, a trio of artists we have not seen on a hit on this chart since 2007 is climbing the list. As Timbaland, Nelly Furtado, and Justin Timberlake's Keep Going Up continues to go up as it climbs 23-21 in its fourth week on the list. It also bumps 16-14 on the Adult Pop Songs chart. maybe it's Adult Pop Airplay. I apologize. Holds at number 30 on the Rhythmic Airplay chart and debuts at number 28 on the Adult Contemporary chart. It's actually only the second AC hit for Timbaland, following the number four peaking Apologize, featuring One Republic in 2008. I still love how that song is credited to Timbaland featuring One Republic.
Yep.
When it's really a One Republic song that Timbaland produced.
Yeah, but the original version of Apologize, it wouldn't have been the hit that it was without the Timbaland of it all.
Sure. It's just funny.
I think.
It's just funny. it's just funny how things get credited so weirdly.
Yes.
Remind me to bring up something before I forget after I finish talking about this, about
okay.
crediting things.
Okay.
The last and only time Timbaland, Furtado, and Timberlake had a hit together as credited artists on a song was Give It To Me, which reached number 3 on pop airplay in 2007. It also hit number 1 on the Hot 100, and it was credited to Timbaland featuring Furtado and Timberlake. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been made clear, as far as the research I've done for this show, if the song is previewing any of the individual artists' own upcoming solo projects, but I would assume if this becomes a hit single, it will probably be on everyone's album.
Right.
The thing I was going to say.
Yes.
And it'll lead you into your...
Yeah, I figured. I know what you're going to talk about right now.
Oh, you
do? NSYNC and Justin Timberlake on Spotify.
Yes!
Yes!
So I didn't realize that I was going to cause a flurry of activity, but the algorithm on socials served me a snippet of someone pointing out how Justin Timberlake was credited as an artist on Better Place,
the new NSYNC song.
Along NSYNC. It said NSYNC and Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
A fan pointed this out. Mm-hmm. And it was also, this is also like sort of a millennial that posts a lot of like fun throwback content. And so she's clearly like an NSYNC fan. And she like sort of made this finger pointing at like, what, why is Justin? That's weird.
Right.
And so
that's a very Pussycat Dolls featuring Nicole Scherzinger moment.
That's the initial thought.
Right.
And so my first thought was, oh, they're doing this because they want to make sure that, like, the algorithms in the DSPs, the digital service providers, and the streaming services, it'll show up for anyone that is looking for songs by Justin or songs by NSYNC. It's really just, like, a SEO thing.
Not to mention the listenership of Justin Timberlake versus that of NSYNC in 2023 is probably larger.
Right. And that is – so I posted a – I went and looked at Apple Music, iTunes, Spotify, and Amazon, and all four of them are crediting NSYNC and Justin Timberlake.
Yes.
The YouTube artist display just says NSYNC, but if you go down into the details and expand it, it says the artist is NSYNC and Justin Timberlake. So basically everywhere it's credited to the two of them. So I posted a screenshot of all those different services, and I just said NSYNC and Justin Timberlake, and I explained how it was credited as such on those services, and then I opined, is that the right word?
Sure.
I suggested, I'm like, it's probably for SEO or algorithm or something, and I just left it at that. One of the first comments was from an industry friend who works at a label, an executive who's not at Sony, and he said, what you said, Katie, you know, it's most likely because they wanted to make sure that it showed up in Justin's Spotify mm-hmm. as one of his songs because the NSYNC page on Spotify has been dormant forever.
I'm also a big proponent of listening to the This Is playlist
right.
on Spotify. So, yes, I would love to be served a Better Place on the This Is Justin Timberlake Spotify.
Right.
Yes.
So it's just a matter of making sure that more eyeballs get onto it. It has nothing to do with vanity or Justin's now credited on a song.
Right.
And then, you know, this sort of got a lot of traction on my socials, mm-hmm. surprisingly. And then a lot of fans were like, I can't believe, you know what, you know, people don't think that we're not smart enough to realize this. And I'm like, actually.
Yeah, correct.
There's a lot of people who the first reaction was, oh, my God, why does Justin have his name there? Mm-hmm. Like, it has nothing to do with that. And
Right. Apparently
someone commented, I don't know.
The Supremes and Diana Ross.
Yeah, this is not a Diana Ross and the Supremes
I'm just going to keep situation. Doing the vanity examples.
this is not an example of that. But it was interesting. Someone commented, and I don't know if this is true, so someone commented on my Instagram post saying that Lance Bass of NSYNC, his husband, I guess, went on TikTok Live or some social media live and explained, allegedly, that, yes, like the band knew all about that. The band all signed off on it
right.
because they wanted to make sure that like it would reach the most people.
It's not unlike the promotion they've been doing for this song, which, you know, has kind of started, like, everything starts with Justin's socials because mm-hmm. they have the most followers.
Right.
And so, like, the first video of all of them in the studio came from Justin Timberlake's Instagram, and then it got shared elsewhere. It got shared on NSYNC, et cetera. But they're very smartly utilizing the most popular member of the band.
I did make sure to point out that the single artwork itself, and thus, I would assume, on all of our – I didn't point this part
out. Oh, yeah. I actually wanted to ask you this question.
The single artwork just says NSYNC on it.
So there, you don't have any sort of inside intel as the charts manager that, like, this is going to be credited to Justin Timberlake on our charts.
Oh, I doubt it.
Okay. I mean, you can cut this out if you want.
I mean, that's something for Gary to look into. Right. I would assume that it most likely would not be.
Right. This is strictly promotional and, you know, for streaming services and their, you know, various idiosyncrasies.
Anyway, Katie, take it away.
Well, I mean, so we've been talking about Better Place already, but maybe we should take a little listen to it for the people.
Oh, right.
What do you think?
Sure. Yes.
Let's hear Better Place by NSYNC. Faster, faster, just let it take you to
featuring Justin Timberlake.
Or not. I just am so pleasantly, you know, I'm just pleasantly surprised that this is such a delightful song, because there was a lot of, you know, buildup and hype. And we haven't had an NSYNC song since 2002. And I just wanted this song to be good. That was my bar. I want it to be good.
So it was good.
I think it's better than good. It's super fun. It's super cute.
Better.
It's we're in a better place than good. I mean, it is just it's a totally great, you know, continuation of their legacy. It's got great vocal highlights for both Justin and JC. They truly are like the co-lead vocalists on this song, yes. Just like in the bulk of the classic NSYNC songs.
Reminded once again about JC's amazing voice.
Oh my God. I mean, this man, his pop voice, like we need it back. Like, this is, if the only purpose this serves is bringing, like, JC's voice back into our life, then it served a good purpose. We both thought we heard a little Chris Kirkpatrick in there.
I thought there was, featured. Like, a tiny bit where it was just, like, him.
A little high part.
Just a little high part. But I'm like,
No, I heard it, too.
But since I don't have any visual to go along with it, I'm like, I don't know who's singing what part in the harmonies.
Yeah, so right now we have a lyric video and then just a static video on the NSYNC page that has, like, a new group shot of them.
Do we know when a video is coming?
I don't.
After the SAG strike is over.
I mean, that feels likely. And the actual movie doesn't come out until November. And so they actually have time to give it a really solid push if the SAG strike were to wrap in the next month.
I was watching something popped up on YouTube the other day, and it was an interview with Lance and I think maybe Joey, post VMAs. So it was in the past like few weeks. And, oh, it was something where it was like the two of them plus...
Was it the Children's Place thing with Wanya Morris from Boyz II Men? Wanya Morris.
And one of the members of Backstreet.
Yes, AJ.
AJ. And they were talking about... Clothing?
Shout out Children's Place. Yeah, it's a kids' clothing.
It's a kids' clothing. It's
like a family clothing collection for the holidays.
Of course, they asked about the NSYNC reunion. And Lance was like, well, we can't really talk about anything because we're in support of the SAG strike. He's like, but yeah, we were supposed to perform on the VMAs.
Yeah.
You confirmed that.
I saw that confirmation, yes. Oh, I mean, like, imagine the parallel timeline where we got that performance.
We would have got a performance, probably a music video. Everything would have been firing on all cylinders at the same time. And it feels like everything is a bit kind of not fully 100%.
Yes. Right now. And I think that back to what I said last week, like I think that the momentum from the VMAs going into the Friday release would have been better because we feel really removed.
Better.
Yeah. Again, better. I feel like we feel really removed from that big pop culture moment right now. And it's like people are still excited, but definitely like a waning of the excitement from, you know, back in September 12th. So, So we'll see. Keith will tell us next week.
We'll see where this debuts on our sort of charts next week.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun that we have a moment with Timbaland, Nelly Furtado, and Justin Timberlake on our charts this week. Next week, we'll find out where Better Place lands.
Yeah. What else did you this weekend aside from listening to new NSYNC music?
Let's see. Calvin had a soccer game.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that.
And I was in Vegas, quick 24-hour jaunt, Friday afternoon to Saturday afternoon to see the opening of Sphere. By the way, there's no the. I was told to not put the in front of it. It's just Sphere.
Yeah, but I think in conversation, we have to put the in front of it.
I went to the opening of Sphere.
I'm going to Sphere.
Of Sphere. And U2 had their very first opening night. It was opening night for the concert, opening night for the venue. It was a magical place to be.
What is the Sphere, Katie?
The Sphere is a new venue.
Sphere?
The Sphere is a new venue in Las Vegas. That is literally a sphere. 366 feet tall. The Statue of Liberty can fit inside of it. just to give you some perspective of how big this place is.
How many stories is that? Did it look bigger than any stories. Of the other? Was it bigger than any of the hotels?
When you
on
talk
the
about
strip?
Height, it's like it's not gonna, you know, eclipse height of like these tall hotel towers.
Is it like as tall as the Bellagio? As tall as Paris?
I don't have that detail. But just the makeup of it being a giant orb, it's like you can't miss it, and it is striking.
Well, also
on the strip.
It lights up from both the outside and the inside.
It does. It's basically like a, you know, a billboard on the outside, like
it's
you
like,
know,
it's like a Sphere TV monitor.
Yeah, it had you know, U2 UV concert signage on it, but it also like threw in a bank ad and, you know, whatever. Like it, they're trying to figure out how to make their
Stouffer's Lean Cuisine.
They're trying to make their $2.3 billion back that they put into building this.
It cost $2.3 billion.
It sure did. Budgeted $1.2 billion, came in at $2.3 billion. It's been being built for 6 years.
Well, COVID happened.
Everyone should also. Well, I think it was supposed to open in 2019 or 2020. So it's like
with
not
this
just
U2
COVID.
Thing?
I don't know about the U2 of it all, okay. But the venue.
Ooh.
And but go ahead and read Eric Renner Brown's feature in Billboard magazine from last week about the building and the technology of the Sphere.
It's also on Billboard.com as well.
It is. But, you know, I got to be in the building for the first, like, public display of it. It's a 18,500 person venue, which is huge for Vegas.
18,000 is basically the equivalent of
the forum, like Staples, crypto.com.
It's as big as an arena in, like, a major city.
Yes.
But it's all kind of like on one side. It's not in the round.
Yes, that's true, because I feel like you would assume it might be a 360 experience, but actually you're basically, the crowd is on, you know, a sliver of pie looking at the giant curved screen, and that way you can use the most of the screen. Like, you don't have crowd blocking.
Right.
You know,
the screen
as a backdrop.
It must be very wide and very steep.
Very. And so where I was sitting, which was the first...
And multiple levels.
Yes. I think it goes up to a 400 section, and I was in the 100 section, which was the first set of seats behind the GA floor. So there's a general admission open floor that goes up to the stage, and then I was in the first seated section. But because I was up front like that, right behind the floor, I could look up and behind. Like, I could see, like, you know, the circle, like, look at the very top of the ceiling and then keep looking backward behind, like, all the way to where the crowd starts. Whereas people who were underneath,
you,
like, yeah, exactly, in the 100 section, they would just look straight ahead. They wouldn't be able to see all the way. Like, there were moments where I was standing up and, like, just walking in circles, looking around at all the things behind me, in front of me, to the side of me. It was a lot.
Because you're basically standing inside a enormous movie theater where a screen surrounds you.
Yeah.
That is like, you know, I don't know, you know, 20 stories tall or something insane. Maybe not that big.
Yeah. I don't even know where to begin on this either. Like, they use the screen in so many different ways. They used it as, I mean, there were times when it was just blue. There were times when it was a night sky and it was dotted with stars all over the entire thing.
Did they show the band on the screens?
Sometimes. There were times when, especially during, there's a section in the middle, which they're calling the turntable section, which it's just the band playing not Akchung Baby songs, taking a break from that and playing different songs every night. Like maybe four or five songs in the middle there, and it'll change up all the time. And for that section, they don't have all the graphics and artwork and things that are all timed to it. So it's a projection of each individual band member, like up above, above them. And so there are times when I think I'd rather be in the very top section and be able to see a more holistic view of the entire sphere.
Yeah.
And there are times when you would feel like lifetimes away from the band if you were up there. And so being where I was, having the intimate moments that where the band wasn't projected, I could still focus and watch the band from my seat. But you couldn't, I think, from every seat, you know?
I was going to say, the social media clips that I saw were very much focused on the dazzling visuals. And my first reaction was, oh, it was like when I saw like a show at the Planetarium at the Griffith Observatory, which I know is not what they want you to come away with. But it was like, oh, that time I saw the Pink Floyd Laserium show at the Planetarium, where I'm like, I'm staring up at a huge round screen hearing Pink Floyd, but I don't see Pink Floyd because all these clips I saw were from the upper deck and it was just you being enveloped by some enormous, like, I'm on mushrooms and acid trip, and I can't even see U2. U2 is, like, the size of, like, mice at the bottom of the screen.
I honestly think U2 really, like, anchored the show well, and I think that a lesser band, a lesser performer, a lesser artist would get swallowed up whole. But the, you know, godlike persona of Bono down there being Bono, doing his Bono thing, the edge, like the audio was also so incredible, which I feel like is probably going to get lost a lot, especially when looking at social media clips. The audio in the building is so unreal, like, good. I mean, it's like, it's better than a recording.
Better than the real thing?
Better than the real thing. And it's, that's what anchors it, is the sound.
You said as much in your, so Katie wrote a story, was it
seven best moments.
Seven best moments from the opening night of the show, the residency. And that I went to read it. I didn't read the whole thing, so. But I did, like, I was, like, trying to find, like, does Katie say, like, the thing I'm thinking she's going to say? And you said that the visuals enhance everything.
I said, the sphere does not overshadow you two. The sphere magnifies you two.
Right. And nice turn of phrase.
And it truly does. I mean, it literally, like, you know, there are the big moments where they're literally, their picture is magnified, but I think it's more about the audio.
Does the band need
and the
to
performance.
Be there?
Yes. I mean, 100%.
I couldn't just go see, like, the Achtung visual experience.
I mean, you could.
Tonight.
I mean, I think that there will be a lot of, I mean, Darren Aronofsky has a film premiering there this Friday called Postcard from Earth. And that is entirely a visual, I mean, audio and visual experience.
Can you imagine seeing it like Interstellar or like Gravity?
I mean, that's the next thing. He actually, they like had to invent a camera for him to film this movie in 18K.
Yeah. I would be afraid because like to connect this to Disneyland.
Sure.
There was a ride at Disneyland and at Disney World called Soarin', where you are in a ride sort of vehicle and you're suspended in the air and you're pushed forward into a curved screen. So and you take a tour of the Earth and the screen curves around you. It ends at some point on the right and left hand sides, but if you're not looking at the right or left hand sides and just looking in the middle,
it
feels
truly
like
immersive
and it feels like you're flying.
Yeah.
The problem is on the sides, if you're sat too far on the left or the right, everything starts to look curved and a little bit weird. Did you have that feeling? Granted, you probably had a great seat and you're in the middle, but do you feel like maybe there could be some distortion if you don't
have
a great seat?
I want to go back and go to like every seat, every section, I'm serious. Like, and I want to see every show that goes here because it's going to be totally different for each artist that performs there. From my perspective, I mean, there was a moment of true disorientation for Even Better Than the Real Thing where I was nervous about the rest of the show because it was only three songs in. And I'm like, oh, I don't think I could feel like this for two straight hours. You know what I mean?
Queasy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you are somebody who gets vertigo or somebody who motion sickness, I mean, yes, that's ironic. And they do perform that song. If you are somebody who has any sort of sensitivities to movement or light or flashing or whatever, I mean, I really was unsure if things were moving around. Like, I thought at various points that the stage was moving, that the floor was moving, and I was convinced that they were taking the general admission floor and, like, tilting it. They weren't. It was entirely a visual trick. But that is how crazy it felt. And then it was like they immediately, like, it was like they gave you the antidote right after and did something chill. And there was nothing ever to that level ever again throughout the entire show. Like, nothing that made you, like, hold on to your arm, you know, the arms of your chair. Like, I'm going to get, like, ejected from the seat or something.
Cut to the people in the upper deck who are puking. So you mentioned this. I will segue if this is all right. So what artists, Katie, since you want to go there again and again and again, what artists do you feel like would really excel in this kind of environment?
Well, the first person I thought of, because kind of like Keith only thinking of Madonna, sometimes I only think of Coldplay. So I immediately thought of Coldplay as a band that has a huge production of a tour, are excellent performers and can really hold their own against a lot of striking visuals and a lot of bells and whistles.
Yeah.
And also excellent musicians, and I could just hear the audio already. They have an album called Music of the Spheres. It's sure. right there.
It's right there.
I mean, it could just be called Music of the Sphere instead, and that's the tour, or not the non-tour. I don't know why U2 doesn't want to call it a residency. They're there for 25 shows. That's a residency. But they really don't want to call it that. So I'm not going to call it that. But Coldplay, when they have their residency, because they'll be fine calling it that.
They'll be fine.
The visual will be insane. And also, Chris Martin has made a lot of comments about the, you know, environmental sustainability of touring. They've added a lot of things into their production that, you know, offset the environmental impact of them, you know, flying all over the world, taking all this production around the world. I think they would like the idea of staying in one place for like a long time as far as we're talking about environmental impact, you know?
Could Adele play there?
It's funny because I immediately thought of Adele because remember at the beginning of that show how striking it is when she starts out with just that little A shape above her head of like curtains and then all of a sudden it opens up to, you know, 180 degrees of screens to your left and right.
Yeah.
And but of course not going up like that. I think yes, because you'd want to hear her sing in that venue. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, we saw a big production of Adele's. Like, could you translate that to the Sphere? Probably.
Yeah.
With the right artists? Yeah.
Who else?
You mentioned Pink Floyd. You mentioned them about the planetarium, but obviously that's the vibe,
yes,
too.
Yeah, I mean, I would think of...
There's the entire, you know, high feeling of it all.
Yeah. I mean, I just think, like, okay, who can fill an arena / stadium with lots of mega visuals?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, Pink Floyd, Rolling Stones, Coldplay.
Rolling Stones were mentioned. Oh, I also covered the red carpet before the show.
I know, Keith. I didn't realize there was a red carpet, and you posted pictures. I'm like, there's a red carpet?
Yeah, there was a red carpet, and I was like, what's this going to be? I don't know. I'll just go find out. And it was all the—
Did you do any interviews on it?
Yeah.
Oh.
It was all the celebrities who—or not all. Like, there was no Oprah, Paul McCartney, or LeBron, but...
Did Guy Osiri waft by you?
I did not see Guy.
Darn.
Hi,
Guy.
But I talked to a wide selection of people. I mean, Diplo was the most relevant to Billboard, but then...
Friend of the podcast, Diplo.
Yes, exactly. Bryan Cranston and Aaron Paul. Luke Wilson? Sure.
Sure,
I'd like
not?
To talk to Luke Wilson. So just a smattering of celebrities that came through, but Rolling Stones were mentioned as, like, people they'd like to see there next.
Mm-hmm.
There's already rumors going around in, like, local Las Vegas newspapers that Phish is in conversation.
Well, there you go.
Somebody mentioned New Year's Eve, but they literally are playing MSG on New Year's Eve in New York.
That.
But this is an MSG production, the Sphere. It's the CEO
maybe
of...
Maybe they can beam it from MSG to the
maybe.
Sphere.
Oh, that's actually not a bad idea. Maybe that's why there's all sorts of rumblings.
Hmm.
That's interesting. So it would make sense if Phish were to do that at some point, because they obviously already have this ongoing relationship with Madison Square Garden, and the CEO of the Sphere Entertainment Company is James Dolan, who is also in charge of Madison Square Garden Entertainment.
So we've got a Coldplay, we've got a Stones, we've got possibly an Adele.
Oh, there's another rumor.
Oh,
Harry
cool.
Styles. And I think that
because of the
fans
MSG connection?
Are, yes, the Azoff connection.
Hmm.
I think that fans are, you know, fueling that right now. I don't think there's anything tangible, but can't you see, like, I could imagine that he's already been walked through there, been shown the technology, et cetera, because of his relationship with Jeffrey and Irving Azoff.
I would imagine there's probably, with something like this, much like the ABBA Avatar situation,
mm-hmm.
when you have something that is different,
mm-hmm.
that is successful, this has all appearances of being successful.
Yes.
Other artists will want to go see it,
yes.
and see if, like, should I participate in this? Can we replicate this? What
yes.
can I learn from this? So there's probably any number of artists, including possibly Harry Styles, that have already been previewed
yeah.
and been told all about it. And I'm sure lots of artists have been like, hey, we want to show you what we can do, what you can do here.
Exactly.
Would you like to be part of this amazing experience?
Exactly. I mean, I think
YouTube just happened to be the first to be like, we believe in this. Let's do
well,
it.
Well, I mean, they approached YouTube, I think, to because it just made – it makes all the sense in the world, them – like, because they're just such a live act, and they're such professionals, and they have a deep catalog, and et cetera, et cetera. Like, there were so many reasons it made sense for them. I mean, NSYNC reunion. They sure. They wouldn't have to go anywhere. They could just stay in Vegas.
And that's what this is how we end. And NSYNC.
Should I just circle it back to NSYNC?
There we go.
Is there a better place for them to stage their reunion than Sphere?
I'm just looking at me. I didn't mention Madonna as a possibility.
I don't think Madonna wants to do this.
She's busy.
Do you? I don't know.
She's busy. Wait,
I want to say one more thing and
okay.
I'll stop.
I was just being mindful of the time.
I just want to also say on the red carpet, I, for whatever reason, interviewed Oscar De La Hoya and was like, hey, there's a lot of boxing matches in Vegas. Like, do you think, you know, you could ever see boxing at the Sphere? And he's like, we're already talking about it. And I'm like, okay, Oscar.
Did you put that into a headline?
I didn't yet.
Boxing
I told,
on the way
but
to
I figured
Sphere?
That's a little podcast exclusive for you. Diplo also talked about whether, like, DJs, I mean, God,
oh, well,
that's overwhelming. The idea of it is overwhelming.
Electric Daisy, whatchamacallit,
yes.
Inside there.
I mean, who will be the first DJ?
You don't need to build a set. Just have it all be projections.
It will be. I mean, that's the thing. Like, that's the other thing about this. Like, it's elaborate, but it's also simple. It's like,
it's all CGI.
The elaborate part is the artwork and the graphics and the, you know, all of that. The simple part is, like, you saw the postage stamp size stage that you two are on. Like, there is no production. It's a you know, a thumb drive is the production.
Jesus.
Dead ass serious. Like, that's what it is. So I don't know.
2.3 billion later.
I don't know who it will be, but there will be a DJ residency there. I wonder who will be the first one. I mean, Diplo would make sense.
And Sphere is connected to the Hotel Venetian, right?
It's connected. Originally, it was called the Sphere at the Venetian or something. The Venetian was in the name. It's not anymore.
Oh.
But they are literally connected. There's a tunnel that goes between them.
Watch. It's like, you know, day pool party at Sphere with Diplo.
Gonna put a pool in the GA floor becomes a pool.
Yes, for all we know.
Okay.
Like, it rolls back. There's an ice skating rink. Cirque du Sphere.
People would drown, like, watching the visuals. I don't think that's a
like
good
the
idea.
Water, I mean, can
I
you
would just be like wandering.
If Cirque du Soleil, like, stages a,
oh my
like
God.
A Cirque du Soleil at Sphere.
Well, I don't know what that would look like. That would almost be just like a video production, you know?
Combine them both.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, we'll move on.
The possibilities are endless.
All right, now it's time for the chart stat of the week. Uh, 35 years ago this week, the rock band Def Leppard got its first and so far only number one on the Billboard Hot 100 with Love Bites. The power ballad climbed 2-1 on the list dated October 8th, 1988. It was one of an incredible, at the time, 7 Hot 100 hits from the Hysteria album. The set spun off, in order, the following singles. Women, which peaked at number 80. Animal, it hit number 19. The title track, which reached number 10. Pour Some Sugar on Me, hit number 2.
Oof.
How frustrating. Love Bites, of course, hit number 1. Armageddon It, hit number 3.
Still a hilarious song title.
And Rocket, hit number 12. Fun fact, Women debuted on the Hot 100 dated August 22nd, 1987. And Rocket had its last week on the chart dated May 27th, 1989. Meaning the album was fully working singles for 2 years in the United States. Today, an artist might release multiple albums in a two-year span. Youngboy Never Broke Again has, I think, put out like 15 albums in the last 2 years.
Or there's Zach Bryan with two a month.
The Hysteria album spent 6 weeks at number one on the Billboard 200 and was the first of two number ones for the band. They also hit the top with their next release, 1992's Adrenalize. So there you have it. This week, 35 years ago, Def Leppard got its first and so far only number one on the Hot 100 with Love Bites.
We saw Def Leppard together. iHeartRadio.
I don't think
Were
I
you
did.
Not standing right next to me for that?
I was there for the night where it was like Pitbull and Usher.
Oh.
No, you and I saw U2 at iHeart.
I know that. That was before this. Before Friday, that was the biggest U2 show I'd seen.
Really?
Yeah.
You had never seen a
hadn't been to a tour.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I know. I felt like I missed out when I went to that fan, like, portal thing they had at the Venetian. It was all, like, around, like, Zoo TV and stuff, and it was, like, really cool. I'm like, I missed out.
Hmm. So what song should we go out on?
How about my favorite U2 song that they didn't play? Because, I mean, they played some of my favorites, but they didn't play one that
With
I
was, or Without You.
Oh, they definitely played that. Kelly Clarkson mentioned, remember, that she went to that show where they didn't play it?
Oh,
do you
no.
remember that? Oh, she said in her, she was talking about her Vegas residency when we were talking to her for the podcast. She said she went to see U2 and she was so jazzed for With or Without You and they just didn't play it that night. She's like, what? Like, are they serious? And so that's why she was going to make sure she played all her hits, like, for every concert forevermore, because she never wanted to do that to somebody else. But they didn't play The Sweetest Thing, which it's a tiny little song for the Sphere. And it's a cute little song and I'd like to hear it right now to end the podcast.
We will go out on that and we will see you next time.
Bye. My love, she throws me.